This is the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast, Episode 88, How Do I Obtain or Amend a Georgia Death Certificate? The Nursing Home Abuse Podcast is dedicated to providing news and information for families whose loved ones have been injured in a nursing home. Here are your hosts, Georgia attorneys Rob Schenck and Will Smith. Hello out there and welcome once again to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. My name is Rob Schenck.
And I'm Will Smith.
And we are your hosts for this episode, another educational episode in our line of educational episodes, I guess, so to speak. I don't know. But anyway, we're going to be talking about death certificates. Death certificates are often important in nursing home abuse cases because it's a document that in some ways reveals sometimes the cause of death. Important information that could be used at trial or at least in the discovery process of a nursing home abuse case. But sometimes we have clients that come in whose loved ones have recently passed and they're clueless in terms of how to get, or if the information is wrong, how to amend that death certificate, at least in the state of Georgia.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, there's no autopsy. A death certificate is the final word on somebody's death.
Exactly. So today we're going to have somebody very special on the show. Will, who is it?
We're going to have Mr. Tommy Davis. Tommy started his career with the Newton County Coroner's Office in 2003. He was appointed as deputy coroner at that time, serving under then-coroner Bob Wheeler. Coroner Wheeler retired in 2008, and Tommy decided to seek the office of coroner and was elected in 2008, again in 2012, and is currently serving his third term, having been reelected in 2016. Tommy's background is in the mortuary science. He is a licensed funeral director and embalmer in the state of Georgia since 1989. He's worked in the funeral industry since 84, and he currently owns and operates J.C. Harewell and Son Funeral Home in Covington. He's active in his community and serves on the board of directors for the Rotary Club of Covington, where he is past president. He is a Mason, an Elk, and a member of the Covington Lions Club. He and his family are members of the First Baptist Church of Covington, and Tommy received the Covington Rotary Club's W. Lee Arundel Vocational Excellence Award in 2016. He was Rotarian of the Year in 2017, and received the Robert S. Stubbs II Guardian of Excellence Award in 2018. The training for the job of coroner is received at the Georgia Public Safety Training Center in Forsyth, where law enforcement also go. Tommy has received almost 400 hours of training at the center and has investigated several thousand deaths, ranging from natural deaths to suicide, homicides, and even accidental deaths. He has testified in court to his findings. He speaks on a regular basis to forensic classes and students at the Newton College and Career Academy, Alcove High School, Eastside High School, Newton High School, and other civic and local groups. So we are extremely excited to have somebody with this breadth of knowledge and experience to talk about something so important to our listeners and their loved ones.
Tommy, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
Great. Well, Tommy, just before we get into the crux of the show, which is talking about Georgia death certificates, something was pointed out to me by our fantastic member of our team who does the transcriptions. His name is Dennis. And Dennis pointed out to me, he wanted me to ask this question, but is it true that the coroner is the only person that's allowed to arrest the sheriff in the county?
That's not really the case. That was an old law, and the reason it was in place is because the coroner and the sheriff are both elected. If the sheriff had to go to jail for some reason, then the coroner would take over as the sheriff until time of either his reinstatement or a special election could be held to replace the sheriff. And so that's really how it works. If the sheriff refuses to or can't do his job, according to Georgia law, then the probate judge would appoint the coroner to complete those duties and tasks.
Gotcha. Okay, I thought that was one of those little funny little facts that, you know, you hear sometimes on the internet or whatever. But anyway, well, thanks for clearing that up, and hopefully that answers Dennis's query as he transcribes this episode. But at any rate, Tommy, thanks so much for coming on the show. This show is going to be dedicated to the Georgia death certificate. And so just from a preliminary standpoint, what is a death certificate and what is its function?
Well, Georgia death certificate, or any death certificate for that matter, is the legal document used for that deceased person from the time of their death forward for legal matters, tax purposes. It does display biographical information for genealogy, but it also lists the cause and manner of death. But that document is certified in the state and used by the family to probate the deceased estate, to handle any legal matters. It's a proof of death. It can be used as a proof of death for questions that might arise. So that document is vitally important to the process of probate and of the deceased estate.
And upon the time of death, what are the factors that go into generating that document? Like who is the person that gets called? How do they, you know, go about filling out the information? How do they get the information? That kind of thing. Can you walk us through that?
Okay. Sure. The death certificate is created by the funeral home. The funeral home generates the death certificate. They basically sit down with the family and are the informant at that point, and gather all the information necessary to complete the death certificate. They send that form to the doctor, or hospice group, or medical examiner / coroner, whoever's going to sign and place the cause and manner of death there. They send that document on to that person. The death certificate medical certification or medical portion is done by that person and then certified by the county of death and the state of Georgia. So the death certificate originates with the funeral home, then to the medical provider. Then once the biographical and medical portions are together, or demographical and medical portions are together, then it's certified by the county and the state, actually, as a certified death certificate.
And who at the funeral home is, I understand how the person at the funeral home would get the biographical information. You'd probably get that from the family. However, what about the cause of death? How would first of all, who at the funeral home is doing it, and how would the person at the funeral home that's generating this document, how do they get cause of death information?
They get the cause of death from the medical provider actually puts the cause and manner of death on the document, not the funeral home. Mm-hmm. The funeral home just initiates the form and then sends it to the medical provider, and the medical provider then places the cause and manner of death on that document and signs off on it as well. So the medical portion is put on there by the medical provider, whether it be a doctor, or a coroner or medical examiner, a hospice group, which is a doctor as well. Those are the people that would place the cause and manner of death on there.
And how do they determine what the cause and manner of death is?
The cause and manner of death can be determined several ways. One, of course, by medical record. If the person has an extensive medical history, the death is expected. They've been diagnosed with cancer or heart disease or, you know, congestive heart failure, diabetes complications, all of those things would be contributing to the cause of death. The doctor would have a documented medical history on the person. I know we're talking about nursing home cases here. So most of your nursing home people would have a documented medical history with a primary care provider, and that documented history can be used to determine the cause and manner of death.
And generally, Tommy, start to finish, how long does the process take from the time of the initiation of the document at the funeral home itself?
Well, the state of Georgia did something here just a couple of years ago. They instituted an electronic death certificate, the Gavers system in the state of Georgia, the funeral home can actually sit down after they gather the information from the family. They can sit down and input this into the Gavers system. It will generate the death certificate at that point. You can designate the medical provider, and it can all be electronic, straight to the medical provider. They get it, place, cause, and manner. It comes back to the funeral home for demographic verification and then released to the county. Or you can drop that form to paper, send it from the funeral home to the medical provider by fax or by hand. The doctor would then sign off, place and cause and manner on there and his signature, and then you would take that form and fax it on to the county of death so they could begin the process. I have had that process take as little as 30 minutes, and I've had it take as long as 120 to 140 days. It depends on the situation.
So what was
around the death?
Right. So what are some of the instances that would cause it to take 30 minutes, and what are some of the instances that would cause it to take the 120 days?
The if you were getting a death certificate turned around quickly, say 30 minutes or so, the doctor already has the known cause and manner at hand. They are ready to sign off on it. You contact them. Hey, I need this back. Send it to them. They place cause and manner on there. And it's a natural death. It's usually a death looking back over the medical records. They've been diagnosed, and it's an expected death, if you will. If you're looking at extended terms, 100 to 120 days or so, those cases are through your medical examiner and coroner's offices typically, when there are some histology and toxicology testing that we're waiting on to come back so the medical examiner can determine the cause and manner of death based off of autopsy findings and those tests returning. So those can be delayed because of toxicology and histology testing being delayed.
And in cases where there, you know, it's mandatory or it has been requested and approved that there's an autopsy, does the death certificate need to wait for the autopsy?
In most cases, it should. The there is a place on a death certificate where you can list or you can check a box that says pending investigation. You can check that and mark the death certificate as pending. However, that does nothing for the family. Insurance companies won't accept it because they don't know the cause and manner of death. So they won't pay off on insurance policies to cover funeral expenses or move forward with the deceased estate. There are some, in some cases, that the pending status of a death certificate will help the family. But in most cases, it won't. Most cases, the pending status causes the coroner or medical examiner to have to go back in once the determining cause and manner is made and write an amendment letter or a request to the state to amend the death certificate to show the cause and manner of death. And like I said, that could be 90 to 120 days later that amendment is being done. And then it's a process of getting that letter from the medical examiner or coroner or doctor to the state, and then the state taking that and actually going in the system and placing cause and manner and then issuing those death certificates. And the family will have to pay for those death certificates again. The state of Georgia charges $25 for the first copy and $5 for each additional copy. Most families see that 5 to 10 copies usually takes care of their business matters. So you're talking about $45 to $70 of expense that would have to be done again once the cause and manner is determined.
Tommy, are you aware of any instances? And if so, what happens in a case in which the coroner's office or the medical examiner, maybe there's a disagreement as to the cause of death. Like, who has the final say in terms of this is what's actually going to go on this document?
Hold on. Tommy, are you feeding a bunch of birds?
I'm sitting on the front porch At my funeral home. Do you hear the birds chirping in the background?
Yeah, I'm sorry, man. The phone is a microphone, and I thought you were like in a bird cage or something.
Oh, I'm actually just sitting out on the front porch here at the funeral home talking to you guys on the phone. Let me step inside where maybe it cuts down some of that background noise for you.
That's kind of pleasant. Like, because sometimes when I'm working, I listen to like jungle sounds, which is like, or rain, and that's like kind of like.
Sure. Kind of the rivers or streams effect, right?
Yeah. It's a pleasant morning in Covington, Georgia, I would imagine.
Yeah, it is. Nice day. Is that better?
Oh, yeah, man. Absolutely.
Okay. And so, Tommy, I think the question was, what happens when there's a disagreement as to the cause of death by the medical examiner's office, if there is ever? You know, I mean, I don't know, like, who has the final say to – maybe the family is disputing what the medical examiner says.
Yeah, is there a way they can go about and amend or change the document?
Well, the death certificate, the ruling by the medical examiner – is what we base as the coroner's office. If there's an autopsy done, if there's things like that done, then their findings during that process are what we depend on to place on the death certificate as cause and manner. If the coroner and the medical examiner disagree, then they would sit down and review the case from its beginning all the way through the findings of the autopsy, so that they can both understand fully what's going on. And then if that happens, then there's some clarity made, right? There's some clarifications made on one side or the other, whoever's in disagreement. And then if it needs to be changed, you can change it before it goes to the death certificate. If a death certificate is completed with the cause and manner of death and the family disagrees with it, they can definitely meet with the coroner or the medical examiner or the doctor in that case and go over why the medical examiner, coroner, or doctor determined that to be the cause and manner of death. You know, in the state of Georgia and every state across the country, there's only five manners of death. There's accident, homicide, suicide, natural death, and then deaths that are undeterminable. Those are the five manners, but there is unlimited causes. Anything could be listed as a cause of death.
I got you. And homicide is a word that I think that most of us misunderstand and misuse. What does homicide mean?
Homicide, by definition, is the death at the hands of another.
Okay.
So a police officer, unfortunately, has to take the life of someone during the duties of his job.
Right.
He's not. Murder is a criminal charge. Homicide is a manner of death.
And there we go.
The death would be, gunshot wound, homicide. Mm-hmm. Murder is a criminal charge that the courts deal with.
I got you. So a police officer rolls up on a bank robbery and the robber is about to kill a bunch of people and he saves him. He shoots this guy. He has committed and kills him. He's committed a homicide. Mm-hmm. That is not a legal determination, though. That's just a manner of death.
Well, and you're not actually committing that homicide. That homicide is just a manner of death.
I got you.
Right.
I lost my train of thought. What my question was going to be. How can the family request that meeting with the medical examiner or the coroner's office to talk about the manner and the cause of death on that death certificate? Is that an easy process, just calling them up, or how do they do
it? Sure. It's very simple. In the state of Georgia, there's 159 counties. 154 of those counties operate under the coroner system. The coroner in those counties is an elected official. He has deputy coroner or more, one or more deputy coroners that work under him. The coroner being in the community, being an elected official, should always be available for people to make contact with, call, email, talk with them, understand better about why they determined the cause and manner to be this. The coroner should always be available. I'm not going to tell you that they're always going to agree. Especially in cases like suicide being the death at your own hand. A lot of times, you know, nobody wants to believe that the person has been a victim of homicide. And a lot of people say they committed suicide. They committed suicide. I sometimes tend to believe that you're a victim of it.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so the families don't want to sometimes believe that that could happen when all the evidence and all the facts of the case point to it being suicide. It's kind of a dragnet theory, if you will. Back years ago, in dragnet shows, just the facts, right?
Right. Just the facts, ma'am.
That's right. Yeah. So it's a just the facts type of thing. We have to do our due diligence. We have to do a complete investigation. And the biggest part of any investigation is following the evidence as you have it, as it's presented to you.
I imagine that's got to be pretty hard because, you know, our job is the same thing. I mean, at the end of the day, if it looks like a duck, it talks like a duck, it quacks like a duck, we know it's a duck. And the family members, I would imagine, are just as emotional, you know, in your line of work as they are with ours. And they may not accept evidence. They may have a predisposed, you know, perspective about why their loved one dies, but you know, at the end of the day, you guys are following the evidence.
That's correct. I've had a family that actually brought in a retired medical examiner investigator that they were friendly with or knew from a church
of course setting,
and he had retired, and they were in question of our findings, which is fine. We don't mind that.
Sure.
And he came in with them. He asked, you know, they gave us permission to discuss in front of him what had taken place, because I don't discuss any particular case with anyone outside of the family.
Sure.
Unless it's, you know, approved by them or a legal situation where I have to. But they brought in this gentleman, and we talked about everything. He asked a few questions. We, you know, gave all the information we could give, and he turned to the family and he said, "Tommy's right. You know, this is exactly what happened."
Yeah.
But we welcomed their questions, because people just don't understand in most cases. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind people asking at all. Sit and talk to them for hours if I have to.
That's good to know, Tommy. That's fantastic. And I hope that attitude is the attitude of most of the 159 county coroners. That's great.
I hope so. Yes, sir.
And Tommy, you mentioned a few minutes ago that the family would pay $5 per copy of the death certificate. Can you tell us, where does the family go? How do they know that it's ready? And then where do they go to pick it up?
The 25 for the first copy, 5 for each additional copy, right, same right. Fees of a birth certificate. The funeral home is the originator of that document. They're the ones that file that document, and it can be just simply arranged through the funeral home that the funeral home would get their certified copies for them and deliver them to them either by hand or mail at the time of its completion.
And
in the funeral business.
Go ahead, Tommy. I apologize. Go ahead.
We try to get them done as quickly as possible and get them to the family, you know, within a day or two in most cases, because we know how vital that certificate is for them to start moving forward.
And the word family is, you know, pretty expansive. I mean, it could be, you know, children. It could be siblings. It could be, mm-hmm. you know, second cousin twice removed. Who has a right to request and get a death certificate in Georgia? In other words, can I go down right now and get a death certificate from anybody who's passed away?
No, I don't believe you could. The vital records registrar in the county, and most of those are your probate courts. Sometimes health departments are your vital records registrars, but in most counties, a probate court handles that. Probate court would have a set of rules that you have to abide by. It has to be a close next of kin, like the spouse or the children, in order to receive a completed death certificate. Now, information can be redacted from that death certificate if you're doing something for genealogy's sake.
Gotcha.
They could take strike through the cause and manner of death, any information about injuries and things like that, and just provide them with the demographic information on the death certificate.
Understood.
But that would be, again, up to the registrar of the county and state as to what information can be released.
So that means, I guess, would the family member or the next of kin that is requesting the document from the funeral home, they would need to show a driver's license to show, or do they need some other type of documentation to get the death certificate?
They fill out a little request there at the probate office or the vital records office, mm-hmm. and state the fact that they are this person. I'm sure they have to have their ID. Most cases, it's the informant that would be going to get the death certificate, and right. The informant is actually listed on the death certificate.
Now, who is the informant, and what does that mean?
The informant is typically the person that provides the information to the funeral home. Most cases, it would be the spouse or the children of or grandchildren of the deceased. It can be designated by a Georgia Healthcare Advance Directive to be anyone. And a Georgia Healthcare Advance Directive supersedes everybody.
Right.
Paramount right of disposition and all of that comes into play. But this legal document that just say I signed giving someone else permission to take care of all of my affairs after my death, that person then would be the informant and the one entitled to things as far as legal matters move forward and have all the rights to say how the person is, the body is disposed of, whether by burial or cremation. So they kind of, that's a very important document in the state of Georgia.
Understood.
Very good. Well, Tommy, this has been very informative. We really appreciate you coming on the show and sharing your knowledge about this. A lot of our audience members are family members of loved ones that who have passed away in a nursing home. So this information is very useful to them.
Sure. Yeah, all nursing homes have a medical director, and that medical director typically signs the death certificates on nursing home deaths. That medical doctor who is the medical director. Mm-hmm. So that's unless they're moved into hospice or in a hospital when they die.
Right.
But that medical director is a very important person at that facility.
Okay. Well, excellent. Tommy, are you going to be running? I don't know how this works in Covington or how it works mm-hmm. in general. Are you going to be running for a fourth term as coroner?
I hope so. Yes, sir. It's every 4 years we're run for office and hopefully we'll be elected again. I enjoy the job. People look at me funny when I say that, but I take it very serious, and it's a job that you have to be very compassionate toward people. You have to be able to follow the evidence as it's presented to you, keep your professionalism always up front, and it's just a job I enjoy doing. I just enjoy serving my community like that, and I think it's very important to the community.
And so that'd be 2020, right?
2020.
Yeah.
Yes, sir.
So
the
So this means then, I'm assuming this is your first public announcement that you'll be seeking re-election in 2020. We get the scoop here at the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Well, very good, Tommy.
Well, great, Tommy.
We appreciate it very much. And we'll good luck to you in 2020. We don't live in Covington, but to any listener out there in Covington, look up Tommy Davis and give him your vote.
I appreciate you guys. Thank you very much.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Have a good day.
Bye-bye.
Okay. And this is going to be one of those instances in which I could be making this up, but there was a movie that came out in the early 80s called Cannonball Run, featuring Burt Reynolds, Dean Martin, Sammy Davis Jr.
I can tell you right now that you're not making that up. That is 100% true.
That's not what I'm talking about.
Oh, okay.
There's a scene in that movie where the Cannonball Run is a race. It's an auto race across the country. It's illegal. Mm-hmm. And oftentimes the participants need to disguise their vehicles as something else because you can't have a race car go across the country. You get stopped by the cops. So the beginning of the movie, Burt Reynolds and Dom DeLuise are drivers, and they're trying to brainstorm how they can hide their vehicle, which eventually they decide on an ambulance. Okay. Mm-hmm. So they're going to ride an ambulance across the country. But anyway, there's a montage of them. They're in a boat going real fast. They're in an airplane, blah, blah, blah. And so they're talking about that. But at any rate, while they're in the airplane, Burt Reynolds' character is drinking like a Budweiser or Coors or whatever the sponsorship was. And he chucks it out the window. He's like, we need more beer in the plane. They're in a little prop plane. And so Burt Reynolds lands the airplane in a little town square. And I think that town square where they filmed that, it was Covington.
Oh, okay. I didn't know where this.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure that the town, and I could be wrong about that, but I think it's true that it was the whatever the town square is in Covington, that's where they filmed the plane hitting the ground.
Yeah.
And Dom DeLuise getting out, buying beer, and getting back on the plane and then taking
off. Well, I know that the setup for that tidbit of information is itself as long as a normal episode.
Yeah.
So we may just make this another episode.
Yeah. The episode 88.2.
Rob has a point to make.
Okay. Anyway, at any weight, that's a really good movie, by the way. It's the first American movie featuring Jackie Chan.
Really?
Yes. It's also they did bloopers at the end of that movie during the credits, and that's where Jackie Chan got his idea to do bloopers.
I think you're right. It is Covington, Georgia. Cannonball Run was in Covington, Georgia.
Yeah.
In 1981, it was filmed in Atlanta and Covington, Georgia.
That's right. So vindication. Thank you. At any rate, that's going to conclude this week's episode of the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. You can consume each and every episode, which comes out Monday mornings, via whatever podcast application that you use, be it Spotify, Stitcher, iTunes, Google, Podcast Puppies, whatever you use, or you can watch us. You can actually see our faces, see information brought on to you on the screen at our website, which is nursinghomeabusepodcast.com, or on our YouTube channel. And with that, we will see you next time.
See you next time. Thanks for tuning in to the Nursing Home Abuse Podcast. Nothing said on this podcast, either by the host or the guest, should be construed as legal advice, nor is intended to create an attorney-client relationship between the host or their guest and the listener. New episodes are available every Monday on Spotify, iTunes, Stitcher, or on your favorite podcast app, as well as on YouTube and our website, nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. Again, that's nursinghomeabusepodcast.com. See you next time.